welcome to Lowering the Rim.
Go to the hole.
It's done.
We're talking about cracks, man.
Welcome back to Lowering the Rim. We have finally made it. We are in the NBA Finals. Oh, my goodness. How are you doing?
Well, I feel like I haven't been lowering the rim as much as I've been dropping the ball lately because I haven't been available to do a podcast with you. I believe the last time we talked, we were previewing the conference finals, and now we're previewing the NBA finals. And if I've learned anything,
next episode we will be previewing the 2023 season.
Exactly. So, you know, in our last episode, we talked about how there was a contingent of people who said, well, this proves that the bubble was real because it was the same teams in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference finals. And if they're holding to that logic, you know, the same result happened except for one team. One team didn't actually make the finals again, and the other team did. So I'm going to give them a half truth on that. The fact checkers, I don't know, what's the fact checking thing? It's like partially true that the bubble was real because the Miami Heat are real, but I don't know that the Lakers were real. So there's that.
Ian, you have permission to speak your half truth.
Okay, so let's talk about the Celtics and the Heat, since that just happened. What were your thoughts on that finals or Eastern Conference Finals rematch? What are your thoughts?
That was just an awesome series. I thought the Heat were going to finish it in five after they went up 3-0. But we got all seven games out of it, which was awesome. It ended the way I thought it would end. After that that Derek White miracle shot, which may or may not have been allowed to happen. A lot of controversy about them adding too much time on the clock there. But regardless, I thought after they lost with 0.2 seconds on the clock that they were going to come out gangbusters game seven. That's exactly what they did. Boston has not been good at home this entire playoff. So that was kind of fitting for them to lose game seven at home. And then the other thing that really stood out to me is Caleb Martin. That fool, I think for the Eastern Conference Finals, he shot like 60, 50, 89. You know, instead of, 50, 40, 90 is the number people throw out. The dude was just insane for like what? He's on a $6 million contract. He's on a vet minimum, basically. He's not even a vet, but he's, you know, shooting lights out. He took over game seven. I mean, Jimmy was good as well, but every time Boston made a run, Derek White got hot there for a little bit. Caleb would just hit a dagger and another dagger just to keep the separation. And he really was the difference in that game seven. For him, it's just when I juxtapose that to like Klay Thompson making $40 million and he basically gave us the donut in the second round, it's just props to Caleb Martin. That dude is the baller, man.
He
wanted it.
Heat culture.
Yeah.
So do you think he got robbed of the Larry Bird Eastern Conference Finals MVP?
No, I don't. I don't. I think he played amazing, but without a guy like Jimmy on your team, that Heat are never even in that position. So I think Himmy deserved it. but I don't know what your thoughts. I mean, he kind of influences the whole culture as well, you know.
Yeah, the vote was close. It was one, you know, if one person voted the other way, it would have gone to Caleb Martin. So, because it was a 5-4 vote. So it was close. I mean, just statistically speaking, Caleb Martin was for sure the MVP. However, Jimmy is obviously the leader of the team. He did, you know, he did something that I think would have easily made him the MVP in game six. Those hitting those three free throws in the clutch like that when you're down two, like you at least have to hit two of them just to tie the game. And then to hit all three of them to win the game when there's only 2 seconds. Oh, wait, take that back. 3 seconds on the clock. I mean, that was really impressive. And it seemed like it was about to be a storybook ending for Jimmy Butler, which would have been really cool because, you know, he missed the three-pointer last year. And so this year he would have hit the three free throws to win it off of the foul on three-pointer. Which would have been really cool. But that shot by Derek White was ridiculous. And Derek White was also awesome in the series. Again, going to Klay Thompson, you go, yeah, I think Derek White might have been better for the Warriors than Klay Thompson was. So what's going on here? These guys and the Heat have a ton of them, right? I mean, it's like just undrafted guys all over the place. Basically, annihilating what I think is one of the most all-around talented teams in the league. I think the Celtics have one of the most versatile 8-man rotations in the NBA. And honestly, some of it may have just come down to coaching. I don't know if there's other stuff. Usually you find out more inner drama, but I want to go back to Derek White real quick. In the context of NBA history, I don't know if you saw this, but Derek White is only the second player in NBA history to make a game-winning buzzer beater when facing elimination and his team trailed prior to the shot. The only other time this has happened is in 1989, Michael Jordan against the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's how rare of air that Derek White was living in with that tip-in shot. Unbelievable stuff there.
I think LeBron was on that Cavs team too, right? No,
but he, you know, well, it's just a collective, you know, loss for all of Northern Ohio. So here's the other thing that just was interesting to me about that series. So game three, the Heat just embarrassed the Celtics.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was just like, it looked like a team that was just giving up and they were going to get swept. But then I got to hand it to the Celtics. They came back with some fight. They won three games in a row and they get to game seven at home and they just embarrass themselves again. It's like, what was it really worth it, guys? I mean, maybe you should have just packed it up in game four. Duncan Robinson is doing the hand to the ear like Hulk Hogan to the crowd. I mean, bro, you are getting clowned by the Heat when that's happening in game seven on your home floor. And then the awards that you get are legendary Celtics, the Bob Cousy Award, yeah, the Larry Bird Award.
Larry Bird MVP.
Oh, man. It was just so could not have gone worse for the They would have been better off just losing in Miami in game four.
It's weird. They have, I mean, like you were saying, they have such versatility, but they just fall in love with shooting the three-pointer. It's so, maybe that's where the coaching element you're talking about comes in. All they want to do is shoot threes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, you have multiple guys that could drive to the basket. Even when they went on their runs, it's because Derek White started taking it to the cup, and that's when they started going their runs, and then they just want to jack threes again. I guess Tatum maybe was settling for threes because he was he had rolled that ankle and he looked like he was, you know, struggling to to make explosive moves like that. But they even benched their big Robinson. You know, he really was not active down low. So I don't. What do you think? What do you make of that? Because they, it was clear even through. It wasn't even just Game Seven. Throughout the series, they just wanted to shoot three pointers. It's like,
yeah, I think that's been a criticism of Joe Mazzulla all year. That the year before, Ime had more of a defensive identity to the team. Like that was the main identity, and Mazzulla is more focused on getting like high quality shots. And kind of gaming the statistics or the analytics of basketball and like, hey, if we just create enough of these open threes, we're going to win. And yeah, I think that came back to bite them. And I think obviously that hurt them. I don't know if Joe Mazzulla will be around next year. What do you think? Do you think they'll let him go?
Ooh, I don't know. Honestly, I don't. Whether he is or isn't, I don't think that's their main concern. The main concern is they got to look at themselves and say they're kind of in the Warrior spot, I think, right now, where it's like, all right, this is the roster we've had for a while now, and it's not getting it done. So what are we going to do? Because they have, you know, what, Tatum and Brown about to extend for $600 million. That's insane for a team that's just not getting it done. So I think that's the bigger question, not so much the coaching. It's like, what are they going to do with the roster?
But again, I go back to, they have enough talent to get it done. I mean, and in my opinion, that's one of the best rosters in the NBA. And last year they definitely looked more like that. And I think coaching did make a difference last year. So I do think a different coach could maybe maximize the roster better. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're paying that much money, you know, and you're not sure that they can get over the hump, I mean, that becomes kind of a big concern if you're the Celtics. But I really like their team. I mean, Tatum and Brown are still really young. So
yeah, that's true. And you can't, if you let them walk, it's hard to replace them too. It's like, where are you going to find somebody like that? But still, I was looking at Brown's contract if he gets extended. And it's like the last couple of years, he's making $60 million a year.
Yeah.
For a dude that can't dribble left, I don't. That's tough, man. I don't know.
Wait. No, it's worse than that, Drew. For a dude that got outplayed by Caleb Martin. two of my favorite people in the 90s, Caleb, our brother, and Martin Lawrence.
From the show Martin.
From the show Martin.
Oh,
I think, great 90s throwback name.
Yeah, Martin's about to get paid, though, so.
Yeah, well,
he's about to make his money.
Another failure for Jordan as an owner because the Hornets let Caleb Martin walk.
Yeah.
So, all right. What do you think? One other thing on this. So kind of zooming out big picture. Before the playoffs, there were a lot of kind of dark horse picks for the NBA Finals champion. And what I mean by that is a non-top one or top two seed. So I'll give you a couple here. People were super high on the Suns. Suns were what, a four seed in the West, and everyone's like, oh, Kevin Durant doesn't lose. Kevin Durant, blah, blah, blah. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Durant has only won with Steph Curry. Okay. He has not won without Steph Curry. He's been on some good teams, has not won, but the Suns got, you know, and the Suns were playing elite basketball. I mean, Booker and Durant were playing elite basketball, but the Nuggets.
Yeah, they actually won games, you know.
Yeah, compared to another team. But yeah, so anyways, that was a dark horse that did not pan out. The Lakers, number 7 seed, were another dark horse. It was like, oh, okay, this team, you know, watch out. Here they come. They had the best defensive rating since the trade deadline. They've made all these amazing moves. You know, watch out for LeBron. LeBron does this every year. Give him Dion Waiters and he's dragging him to the finals. Nope, got swept by Jokic. The Warriors, sixth seed. You know, don't count out the Warriors. They did it last year, blah, 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 blah. They got beat by LeBron, I'm sorry to say, and I'm disappointed to have to report that again. But the one dark horse that nobody, except maybe Bill Simmons, who had to just live through his worst nightmares of the Heat playing the Celtics. He thought he dodged a bullet with them not being the seventh seed and falling to the eighth seed so the Bucks could deal with him, only for them to reemerge in the Eastern Conference Finals and go to the NBA Finals as an eighth seed. I just think that is such an incredible story that the Heat did that.
Has that ever happened? I should have looked this up.
Yeah,
has an eighth seed ever gone to the final? To me,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
I think there's an eighth seed.
That's like something in the NBA that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, in 1999, the Knicks were an eighth seed and made it to the finals.
That's the only time.
Only other time.
So this is rare air then. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only one. Oh man. So what are you thinking for this finals then?
I gotta say, based on the last two series, the conference finals, I just think the Nuggets are deeper and they are, honestly, I think that's why they're going to win. They're just a deeper team. They go like nine guys deep where the Heat is more like seven. And even their, you know, the Nuggets top five, top six are better than the Heat's. And I just think they're hungrier, man. The way Malone has been coaching, especially in that conference finals, he wants it.
Yeah.
He is throwing down the gauntlet, and you can see that it's permeating through his players as well. I mean, Murray especially, like, there was another argument. I'm like, man, this guy could have almost won the conference finals MVP. That dude played out of his mind. So I would pick the Nuggets, but I don't know in how many games. I don't think it's going to be another sweep. What do you think? Maybe six? Or do you think the Heat are going to take it?
I think the Nuggets. I mean, everything would tell you that the Nuggets are going to win, although I am shocked that the Heat have made it this far. I didn't know how the Heat were going to bounce back after losing game six, to be honest with you. I was shocked by what happened in game seven, where they just came out and they looked like they had more energy. I'm like, how is the how is the road team who just got beat, you know, in a nail biter, the ones with more energy? And so, you know, I don't know. It's going to be an amazing series because I like both teams. I'm not sure who – it's one of those series where, like, I'm not actually sure who I'm going to find myself rooting for until I start watching the games. And you know how you just naturally gravitate towards, you know, wanting one team to be successful? I'm going to have to wait and see how the games unfold. I typically find myself rooting for the underdog.
Hold on. I am shocked. I would have thought you would have picked the Heat, like, hands down.
No, because I really like the Nuggets. I like both teams that and how they organically built their team. So I love that, and I love the passing that both teams utilize. Like, it's a lot of ball movement. I mean, the Nuggets, in my opinion, are just a much higher level offensive juggernaut. They should be way better than the Heat from that standpoint, as far as just scoring points.
They're more talented. They have a more talented roster than the Heat do.
Yeah.
The thing I could see the Heat exploiting is if they can just pick on Jokic on offense.
Yeah.
that's maybe where the chink in the armor is for them. Just keep putting him in pick and rolls, because the dude, he skates on defense. He can't play defense, but he's an elite offense. Obviously, he makes up for it on that end, but that might be where they might be able to exploit the Nuggets.
Yeah, I just
don't know what your thought on that. So.
I don't know how the Heat are gonna, go from this grueling 7-game series and then go play in the altitude. Tomorrow night, we're taping this on a Wednesday night. How are they gonna go play on a right after that 7-game series? I just feel like they're not gonna have as much life in their legs. I mean, the Nuggets have been waiting around for over a week.
Yeah.
So I would guess that the Nuggets take the first two games, and maybe Miami could steal one back in Miami, but I would guess the Nuggets finish it in 5 or 6. Would be my prediction, but I could be wrong. I mean, the Heat have been making everyone look silly each round. So
yeah, I'm with you. I think the Nuggets are going to win, but I figured you would have wanted the Heat, and you still not understanding why.
Why? Because of Hemi?
Well, because don't you want to see them win without a certain somebody on the roster?
Oh yeah,
just.
Yeah, it would definitely be an indictment on LeBron if the Heat beat the Nuggets, for sure. But I'm always here for that. I got some LeBron takes that maybe we'll talk about at the end of the podcast here. But the other thing I was thinking about with this, and again, I'm kind of zooming out big picture, is I don't know if you remember this, but I think the team in the bubble had Jeremy Grant. Is that right? The Nuggets team in the bubble?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you might be right.
So here, I don't know exactly when that year was when he left, but basically when he was a free agent, the Nuggets matched what Detroit matched for Jeremy Grant. And Jeremy Grant wanted to go be his own man, go be the number one guy. Didn't quite work out in Detroit. Bounced on over to the Trailblazers. Definitely wasn't the guy on the Trailblazers, but he was kind of the Aaron Gordon role for the Nuggets back then. And I would love to just hear from a guy like that, because as a fan watching that, I'm thinking, why would Jeremy Grant leave the Nuggets to make the same money somewhere else where he can be the guy, but he's on a horrible team? Like, wouldn't it be better to make that money and be like a superstar third option who's winning and playing important games versus being a first option and your team isn't good? So I don't know. That'd be interesting to kind of hear what his thoughts are now, because he could be, he could be in the finals this year.
Yeah. Sometimes their agents are involved as well, where they're telling them where they should and shouldn't go, which is somewhat of an influence. But also, I don't know if you just saw that clip recently where DeRozan was on Paul George's podcast, and they were talking about how majority of guys in the league really don't even, it's just a job to them. They don't like basketball. There's no real love of the game there. It's just, it's good money, obviously, and that's kind of where it stops. So maybe he's one of those guys they're talking about where it's like, yeah, this is just, I'm just here to cash the paychecks, and live the lifestyle.
Maybe. Yeah. It's going to be a fun finals. I thought
that was interesting they said that, because they were talking as if it's like just a few guys that are really into basketball like that.
Do you think you're talking about is Jimmy Butler one of them?
Dude, he clearly is one of them. That dude is. You remember that infamous story about him when he was in Minneapolis, and he couldn't stand the young guys because they had no drive. They didn't have that dog in them. And it was him and all the second string dudes in a scrimmage just busting the starters and all he's doing is talking trash and saying you guys don't want it and this and that. Do you remember that story?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And we kind of heard the same thing when he was in Philly too. He clearly is, he's about that love of the game life. So
love of the game.
He's the X factor where I'm like, man, I don't know if I should be picking the Nuggets. His fool. I don't know if you saw when they were going to they handed out the conference finals trophy and Bam tries to give it to him and he's like, no, no, I'll wait for the next one. That's the one I want to hold. Did you see that footage?
I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing.
Dude's got that dog in him.
Yeah. Honestly, this will be one of the most enjoyable finals for me to watch in years because I like both teams. I think I'll be happy with either team winning. I just want to see some competitive basketball, and I hope the Heat can, you know, put up another great series and great effort like they did. I'm just concerned that, you know, that the last series is just going to take too much of a toll on them, and the Nuggets offense is just going to be too elite for them to keep up with. But who knows? They find ways to win, and Spoelstra is, dude, he is an amazing coach. Both those guys are. I mean, I think Mike Malone and Spoelstra are clearly like two of the best coaches in the NBA, with Mazzulla coming in third. Or no, sorry. I meant Mazzulla is one of the worst coaches in the NBA. But,
you know, Malone is a Warriors guy. He was an assistant there. Which his team now reminds me of the strength in numbers Warriors. Like when they had like Mo Spates and Barbosa, you know, they just ran so deep. Their second unit would destroy you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they definitely have that vibe for sure. But the Heat have the similar strength in numbers vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Both teams to me come across as very hungry, very much like ready to win, you know.
So what do you think about Tyler Hero? Apparently he's going to be ready to go by game three. Are the Heat going to put him out there or no?
Yeah, I think if he actually is healthy, Spo will use him. It's so late in the game that he should be coming off the bench, though. I can't imagine him like putting him back into the starting lineup. I don't know why you would mess up what you got right now.
Yeah, you can't take Caleb Martin out of the starting lineup now.
Yeah, but I mean, anybody in the league that can shoot, there he's going to get some run. You know, you don't just leave a guy like that on the bench. So I'm sure he'll utilize him. Maybe he'll slot him kind of where Duncan Robinson has been coming in. See if that works, but or even like he kind of went away from Kevin Love in this last series, so maybe he would try throwing Hero in where Kevin Love would play.
Yeah.
Just for the shooting. But
all right, did you hear the clip from Sports Illustrated Chris Mannix talking about the Denver Nuggets where he has this quote? He said they're just not a compelling team to talk about and to write about.
It's weird that, you know, he's like a seasoned NBA journalist is saying stuff like that. Because to me, when I see it's Denver and Miami in the finals, it's exciting as someone that just likes basketball, likes to play it, likes to watch it. Because it's going to be void of a lot of the drama and baggage that comes along when, you know, like a LeBron type team gets in. And do you know what I mean? It's just going to be about hoop. It's not going to be about the officiating and the narratives and like, let's create storylines and drama about this. Neither one of those teams has that sort of, you know, reality TV stuff going on. So I don't understand why he would say that.
This is a perfect example of love of the game versus love of the fame. And this is the thing I do not like about where the NBA has been and continues to head is the NBA does have a lot of drama. The media eats it up.
And it's created drama.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like WWE.
It's like self-inflicted drama. Yeah.
Yeah. It's WWE stuff. It's keeping up with the Kardashian stuff.
Yeah.
It's not And then so when they just have to talk about like the actual game of basketball, it becomes uninteresting. And I think it's ruining the product, to be completely honest. This is what the NFL does not have an issue with. The NFL loves talking about the X's and O's of the games and the players and the strengths of the players and the strengths of the defenses and offenses. And how is this matchup going to work against this matchup? And, you know, that's why the NFL is super popular. The NBA and it's a lot of its media counterparts, Chris Mannix being one of them, is like just super into the keeping up with the Kardashians part of the NBA, which is their poster boy, LeBron James. So let's just issue a trigger warning right here for any LeBron James fans listening to this. This is the part of the podcast you may want to bow out on. But the reason why he's saying this is because the environment that LeBron James has created, he's created like this whole, it's not really about what happens on the court, it's the narrative. And I'll give you a great example of this, okay? After the Lakers got swept, because the Lakers got swept by the Nuggets.
And that means they didn't win any games, right?
They didn't win any games. They didn't win any games. Afterwards.
That means they won as many games in the Western Conference Finals as the Warriors did. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And by the way, Steph Curry is still the fourth quarter points leader in the playoffs and the three-point leader in the playoffs. And he hasn't played for like 2 weeks.
That's so crazy, man. And he's not clutch, though. Narrative check, he's not clutch, but he does have the most fourth quarter points in the whole playoffs.
So here's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, of the difference between love of the game versus love of the fame. Right after the Lakers got swept, Brian Windhorst is on some ESPN show saying, "I got to tell you, I think that was the most incredible sweep I have ever seen. I mean, have you ever seen a performance like that? I know they got swept. I'm not trying to hand out participation trophies." Yes, you are handing out participation trophies. They got swept. And guess what? La Narrative, right afterwards, starts talking about retirement and totally takes the focus off of the fact that he just got swept and he missed two clutch shots that would have either tied or put them ahead. And before that, he passed the ball when he had Nikola Jokic on him. Literally, Nikola Jokic is standing away from him with under a minute to go. Nikola Jokic had just scored. He drove in to Anthony Davis, scored the basket. They come down on the other end. LeBron James has Nikola Jokic switched on him less than a minute ago. Lakers are down by two. LeBron has 40 points. Oh my gosh, he's dominating. He's doing all this stuff. Why are you not pulling up on Nikola Jokic or driving and pulling up on Nikola Jokic? Instead, you pass it. It goes out of bounds because KCP deflects it off of Dennis Schroeder's pass to Austin Reeves in the corner. And it's so silly. Like, it's like, what are we doing here? You know,
Ian, he couldn't do that. He has a torn tendon, don't you know?
After he saw the LeBron James of feet, he has a torn tendon.
That's why everyone knows you go to the Michael Jordan feed.
Anyways, this is
true. You know, they also leaked that bogus rumor that he might be traded to the Warriors. It's just like,
It's all narrative. Well, first of all, it's a lot of, you know what magicians do when they're doing a trick? What do magicians do?
They do the call it? The cell or somewhere. It's look over here.
Yeah, they're drawing your attention to something else so you don't pay attention to what's actually happening. What actually happened was LeBron had an incredible 47 minutes. And when it came time to close, Nikola Jokic closed and LeBron didn't, which resulted in a sweep. And then LeBron starts talking about retiring. And I heard a bunch of people, not a bunch of people, I should just say a contingent of NBA Twitter, talking about what LeBron, Jordan retires two times and nobody says anything about that. LeBron, after 20 years, can't consider retiring in a moment of honesty? And it's like, yeah, because Jordan had a three-peat and then retired. Jordan didn't talk about retiring after he got swept, after he's been talking for 3 years about his dream is to play with his son, who's not going to be in the league for another 2 years. So this is obviously some sort of a bait and switch here. It's so nauseating.
But that's where I think the media is in on it. Because everyone knows when he says that, everyone knows it's BS. Because he's been so adamant about he's going to play until his son's in the league. So the media, they know that. They know that him saying that is not a real story, but then they amplify it anyway. And that's why I say it's like self-inflicted drama. They are creating it versus, you know, just, I guess, ignoring the noise, you could say. But, Ian, let's be honest. The ESPN is absolute trash. That channel is trash. It is not. When I used to watch ESPN in like the late 90s, the golden era, it was brilliant. It was like something we had never seen before in sports. Now it is just garbage. It just feels like I'm watching, ops, like plants. Yeah.
But that's clutch, what's weird.
Plants that work, yeah, at ESPN.
Oh, there definitely are clutch plants. And by the way, let me give props where props is due. Tristan Thompson, a clutch plant at ESPN, coming in to game four, and the dude showed up. I was impressed with his effort level. He gave more of an effort than Anthony Davis in that game. So way to go. Way to go, LeBron and Tristan. And Tristan literally is on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So, I mean, talk about a blending of the worlds there. Amazing. But no, you say ESPN is trash, but what's weird about it is this coverage they do of the NFL is not like that. The coverage of the NFL is more love of the game type stuff. It's not all the love of the fame, and all these sideshows and all that.
What are your thoughts on what my perspective of ESPN is they continually put on talking heads that no one likes. Everyone is very clear on it, like NBA Twitter, that they don't like these guys. But they keep doing it. And like a perfect example, that one time they had Patrick Beverley on, and he started spitting like real facts about in-game and the league, etc. That stuff exploded. People were loving that. But that's not what you get. You know what I mean? Why do you think they keep putting on these guys that it's just like, this is stupid. This is not interesting. It has nothing to do with basketball.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you're executives there, why are you not, I guess, giving the customer base what they want? Because you see this. This is not me just saying this hyperbolic. The ratings reflect this. The ratings of all their shows have been dropping. They went through major rounds of firing because they couldn't pay these journalists anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think maybe it's just, I don't know. Honestly, I really have no idea why like that is.
They lost a lot of good talent. I'm thinking of a couple guys like Amino Hassan, Ethan Strauss, you know, Tom guys Haberstro. Like that. Yeah, all those guys went through the rounds of firing because their shows were not those guys specifically, but the basketball content in general at ESPN, the ratings were on the decline. And yeah, they keep pushing it out.
They had an interesting group when they had like the Hoop Collective first started. That was that was Haberstro and Elmino Hassan and
Kevin Pelton.
Kevin Arnovitz was really good. Zach Lowe was in that mix. I wonder if some of those guys were a hangover from the Grantland days. So they may have been more of like Simmons stuff. Cause I do think what Simmons does at the Ringer is more interesting.
Yeah, and that's a great example because he kind of saw the writing on the wall and he's like, I'm going to start my own thing. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he was doing the NBA countdown and all that.
Yeah. Anyways, I think it's an awesome, we don't need to give the Lakers any more airtime, but I think it's an awesome love of the game finals. And I hope that we just get to hear from people like Tim Legler or Zach Lowe more about what is or isn't going on in the finals than some of these other clowns who just do sideshow stuff. All right. A couple other quick things, Drew. Bob Myers leaves the Warriors. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's, I think that was pretty apparent. It just seemed like there was lots of breadcrumbs dropped this season that he was over it. He seems kind of burnt out. Plus, he's just doing other stuff. Like, he has a podcast now. Like, that's kind of, you know, when you start doing other things like that, maybe you're just, you've kind of moved on. Like, what's a GM? Is there another GM that does a podcast? That's kind of weird to me. Right? Yeah. He's the only one, right?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know what to make of it as far as the basketball ops from them. They have some real big decisions they have to make. So the fact that he's gone is could have some serious knock-on effect. Apparently, the rumor is that Dunleavy's just going to slot in. He's kind of been his shadow.
Yeah, maybe it's Dunleavy. I don't know. We'll probably find out in the days ahead. I guess Myers is there through June 30th. Did you see any of the press conference by chance?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
well,
so
the only part I saw was the fire quote from Joe Lacob.
That's what I was going to bring up.
I don't care what the rules are. We're going to win no matter what rules they put in place. That was fire.
Yeah. Yeah. You almost quoted it exactly from memory. It was, we'll win no matter what. I don't care what the rules are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, Joey Lacob is also known as Joey Lightyears because he had the amazing quote about being light years ahead of the competition.
I love another
great quote from the owner there. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know if, I don't know what that means for the Warriors going forward. I think this year will be a strong indication of, are they reloading? Obviously, Lacob wants to reload and win championships. Or are things going to start kind of pulling apart at the seams? Like, how much was Bob Myers really the glue of all of that? Okay, last thing I want to ask you about. Have you seen the movie Air?
No.
Okay. You got to watch that. We need to do a little recap of that movie. It's on
Amazon. You liked it?
It's on Amazon Prime for free. Well, my favorite part was at the very end. You know, they have a little, they do these little, you know, at the end of movies where they kind of give you some text on the screen that kind of tell you what happened. Like, Jordan went on to sell X number of shoes. Jordan went on to blah, 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 blah. And one of them was like, Jordan ended up becoming the greatest basketball player of all time. And I was like, yes, thank you. Thank you for dropping that in there. But no, the movie is really good. I really liked it. Does have some language for those of you who don't want to hear that. There is some language, but it's streaming on Amazon Prime for free.
Can you spoil one aspect of it for me?
Sure.
I'm gonna tell you why when I saw the trailer, I didn't want to see it. In the trailer, they make it appear like his mom is running the show, and it was just too much masculine energy coming from his mother in the trailer anyway. And I was like, I'm not interested in that story. She's boss pants sort of. That's the way the trailer portrayed it. Like, I just like, I'm just not interested in that.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it masculine energy. I would say it was more like a very mama bear type situation. I mean, both his mom and his dad are in it, but his mom is the one who's more kind of on top of talking with the different shoe companies. And they did consult with Jordan. So I think that's actually just how it happened, is that she was kind of the assertive person in the family, kind of like a mama bear sort of vibe.
So that is based on real life. She was like brokering the deals.
Yeah, she runs like multiple foundations on behalf of Jordan now.
Okay.
So I think that's just how she is. She's kind of like a, you know, CEO. I mean, not CEO, but you know what I mean? Like she was the one who was just on top of the situation and trying to make sure that Michael had the best shoe deal that he could get. And so both of his parents are involved, but his mom is kind of the key figure negotiating things.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll have to report back on that.
Yeah, check it out. It's an awesome movie. It's great.
Check it out.
All right, Drew, anything else before we sign off here and maybe recap the finals in fall of 2023?
Yeah, just real quick. What do the Warriors need to do this offseason? What would you do? Man.
Well, I would try to – I mean, unless they can – unless they see some – know something that I don't know, I'd move on from Jordan Poole. I think you got to do something different there. I mean, unless he's going to become a defender, you got to do something different there.
Would you, if you have to trade one, who you trading, Jordan Poole or Klay Thompson?
Jordan Poole.
Okay. Draft pick, you trading it? Keeping it?
I would trade the draft pick if it gets me something. If I could trade Jordan Poole and the draft pick for Caleb Martin and yeah, right. Max Strus, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Draymond, is he going to pick up his option? He's got a player option for $26 million.
I think he will.
Do you sign and trade him?
Maybe. I mean, there's part of me that's like, let's just ship out Draymond and Jordan Poole for Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura. And the problem is Dre is just not replaceable. I mean, there's just nobody defensively like him that can do what he does for the Warriors. That's the problem.
Yeah,
the
flip side of that is they're playing 3-on-5, 4-on-5 on offense.
Yeah.
Which it seems like the league has caught up to.
Yeah.
It's not effective.
So
anymore.
Can we do a clutch for clutch trade? Can we give the Lakers Draymond and Poole for AD?
Yeah, right. Like they're going to bundle the two guys that got in a fight.
Maybe. I mean, LeBron is – doesn't LeBron know how to bring teams together to win championships?
Man, yeah, it's tough, man. They got a lot of decisions, like serious decisions to make. You know, Clay's in the last year of his contract. Plus, not just Poole, but like if Kerr's not going to play any of these young guys, why are we keeping them?
Exactly.
So do you keep Kerr?
Well,
maybe
I think that was
to move on from Kerr.
That was the big miscalculation. It was you. There was. It was never going to work. And again, hindsight's 20/20, but it was never going to work to have Kerr be a developmental coach. So it's like, if you want to draft young guys and develop them, Kerr is not your guy. Kerr needs guys who are like at Wiggins stage or beyond. Yep. Like where they got Wiggins is like the starting place for what Kerr wants to work with. He does not, or DiVincenzo. DiVincenzo is another great example. High IQ player, has played in big games, has been around for a little bit, knows what's required. That's who Kerr wants to work with. He does not want to work with Jonathan Kuminga, James Wiseman, Moses Moody. Loves some Anthony Lamb, though.
That's what I was going to say. The other side of that coin is that he won't play these young guys, but he'll play two-way guys.
But it's because of their...
Into the ground.
It's because of their... basketball IQ. He values basketball IQ way more than talent.
Yeah.
because those guys don't make the mistakes that Kuminga or Moody and definitely not Wiseman are making. Like Anthony Lamb and Ty Jerome, they play within the role that they know they're supposed to play, and they know the role that they're supposed to play. Kuminga doesn't know. He's like, am I Kobe? Am I a spot up shooter? Am I supposed to just catch lobs? You know, he doesn't know, and rightfully so. He's still trying to figure himself out. I think he could be a hybrid of like Wiggins and GP2, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. If I was Kuminga, I'd be like, listen, this is what we want you to get to. And then when you get there, then we'll talk about the next level. We know you want to be Kobe. Let's try to get you at like a hybrid of GP2 and Wiggins, and then we can talk about being Kobe.
Then we can talk about 81.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. We'll see. They're a lot smarter than we are. We'll see what they come up with.
Yeah. I don't know.
What do you think?
My take almost now is you trade Clay and keep Poole. Because he's on an expiring deal, which is valuable in the league.
Even with keeping Draymond too.
Yeah, I'm not sure about what to do with Draymond because he has the player option, so he's kind of in control there. Unless you, like, in bad faith, sign him and then trade him away. But I think even if you do a sign and trade it, it's like you don't get that exact amount of money back under your cap. So yeah. I don't know if that works. Whereas Clay is like you're trading $40 million, so, and it's on an expiring, so that could bring you back like a decent amount of stuff. It would just depend on the deal though, but I don't know.
I think it's going to be an interesting offseason for a lot of teams this year.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the way this season played out where it really was just a toss-up of who's going to make it.
Yeah.
Which might be good, you know. Good for the league sort of parity, but
does the Heat winning the East just continue the narrative that the East is super weak?
I wouldn't say super weak, but the West is definitely the better conference. Yeah, I just think the West is just a better conference, but I don't necessarily think the East is weak. Now you got me like mentally going through each team. Maybe you're right, man.
Yeah, well, it's just it's true that
East is very top heavy, where the West goes like 10 teams deep.
The West teams is definitely deeper. All right, Drew, we need to wrap it up here. Look forward to talking to you after maybe a game or two into this NBA Finals, the true love of the game, NBA Finals. Tell me your pick again. Who's winning and how many games?
Ian, you're about to witness the first 8 seed ever to win an NBA title.
How many games is it going to take them?
It's going to take them 6.
6? Wow. Okay. I've got the Nuggets in 6 or less.
Ian's got the Nuggets in 3, guys.
The Heat had the Celtics in 3. Let them win 3 more and then beat them again. The same way that they beat him in game 3. So,
you know what? It's probably terrible. I'm sticking with the Heat in 6.
Great. Let's do it. All right, Drew. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep. I'll see you.
Are you going to do an outro? I'm trying to set you up there for
that was
thanks for
outro.
Watching.
That was the collective you. I'll see you.
See you.
See you all. Everyone out there in the LTR universe. All 6 of you, I see you.
See you. Thanks for listening to Lowering the Rim.